Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. It has been a little bit since we have joined you. Obviously, co-host Mark King was able to provide a very insightful and thoughtful episode today on all that is going on. And so I wanted to definitely, follow in his footsteps and have a very special guest on with us. Guest who is certainly recurring, but always is a pleasure to have, Joe Mullinax. Joe, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing well, buddy. I'm doing well. I tweeted it out earlier today that it was like old times over at Grizzly Bear Blues. I had a three-piece combo today, three articles in one day. I haven't done that in a long time. It was nice to be back in the swing of things.
I'm sure. And you know, that's the thing about it. As we, get into, the all that's going on, it's been a, as with any day nowadays, it's been a very eventful day. I mean, we'll get into a wide assortment of things, but we'll start off with that. It's nice to get back into the swing of things, something that you're familiar with and something that you enjoy doing. It seems like that, moments like that are especially important to treasure nowadays. Now, before we get into basketball, obviously, there's a lot more important stuff going on with the situation surrounding just the horrifying events that happened last week with the George Floyd murders, as well as just all the things that have come about from it. And you wrote a very powerful article earlier today in regards to your perspective on things, and that's why I wanted to start with just you have knowledge on this, knowledge probably in more levels than a lot of people do, from being a father, from a lot of different perspectives. But you've seen it firsthand as far as the reaction that's occurring right now with all of this. What are your thoughts on what's going on, and how do you put it all into perspective a week later?
Well, I appreciate the kind words. It's called on Daddy's Daughters and Change. And I'll be honest with you, Sean, we have several black writers on our staff over at grizzlybearblues.com, as you know. And in our Slack channel, there were some heated conversations at times between folks, and sometimes things directed at me about our response and the way things are handled at GBB. And I am certainly not above criticism. I've been around for a while now, one of the OG Grizzly bloggers that is still around. But I do think that it's important to understand when you don't understand something. And I will never be able to understand what it's like to be a Black American. And I say it in the piece, I view police officers in my privilege as someone who is there to protect me. Like, it's their job. If something goes wrong, I call the police. Like, that's one of the first things that enters my mind. That is not necessarily the case for people of color across this country. And I do think that that is something that obviously is systemic, dating back 400 years. You can say that it's not a systemic problem, but Jamestown, Virginia, and everything that's happened after that would disagree with you. And I touch on that in the piece. Where I got my motivation, because I did want to write something, I thought that it was important that as the head of the blog, the site manager, people have called me the face of the site, and I take that seriously. I wanted to write something, but obviously my perspective, it would just be another white guy trying to talk about what a Black man or woman feels, and that didn't feel right to me. So I was trying to find the motivation to put it into a perspective that I could not necessarily relate to more, but I think I could do the topic more justice. And then I saw the video of Gianna Floyd. I believe she was on the shoulders to make an NBA tie-in of Steven Jackson, who has the connection to Floyd going back to their childhood. But anyway, regardless of who she was sitting on or who she was with, she said something along the lines of, Daddy changed the world, and that kind of struck a chord with me, because I'm a father of two daughters. I have a 4-year-old and a almost 2-year-old next month. And, in that moment, I realized that she wasn't going to have him there for graduations, all the rites of passage, walking her down the aisle, potentially, if she gets married, as he got older, having grandkids, the whole circle of life. It's supposed to be, you watch your children grow, they take over, and then you pass on. It certainly shouldn't happen this early, and it most certainly shouldn't have happened in the murderous way that it did about a week ago. So when I saw that, it really inspired me to take the perspective of understanding that I need to continue to learn. I need to continue to grow. I am part of the problem in terms of not using my positions of power or leadership or whatever I may have. I'm not using them well enough in our country. And I think there's lots of folks that could say that. So how do I learn and grow and better empathize with the current condition of Black people in America? And I was able to make that connection more through that video clip, through that, you know, shared humanity. Because regardless of the color of your skin or your sexuality or whatever's happening in your life, whatever defines you in terms of what divides us at times in terms of demographics, you know, we're humans. We're at this stage of my life in my mid-30s. We're fathers, you know, we're husbands. We have those relationships and those things that we have in common that oftentimes get pushed aside in these moments of adversity. And I do think that's important to remember. At the end of the article, I quoted William Shakespeare, what is past is prologue. You know, if we don't learn from these things, and there's plenty of evidence throughout our history that suggests this, it's going to continue to happen. You know, our history is the future in a lot of ways. And I think that now more than ever, it feels like this might be the moment where people say enough is enough and the change that needs to happen comes. But it's not going to be easy. And I do think that needs to be a reminder. Again, this is 400 years of tension and trauma that has built up from the colonial American days all the way up to where we are now as a nation. It's not going to be easy. It's going to take time and it's going to take a lot of relationship building and it's probably going to take generations of people, but I'm willing to put in the work and I am willing to learn and listen and start that process even more so now. And fairness to Gianna Floyd, she really, you know, inspired me to take a deeper look at that perspective and really kind of get my words out. So I thank her and I hope folks, you know, got something out of it. I've gotten good feedback so far and I appreciate that. And, you know, I said that it was the most important article I've ever written. I've written over 1500 pieces for grizzlybearblues.com. I had said it was the most important one I'd ever done. And I stand by that.
And I think that, you know, the way that you just ended, you know, that answer right there is the importance. There's a reason why it should be the most important article that you've ever written, in my opinion, is because this the importance of realizing just how real racism is in our society right now. It has to be important for everybody. You know, no matter race, whatever it may be, everybody has the right to be treated equally. And so it should be important to everyone. And as you stated, you know, it's about learning, communication, talking, understanding, you know, whatever it may be. On my perspective, it's me being more open-minded to want to understand, to want to learn, but beyond that, also taking that and acting upon it. Just as you stated, you know, in leadership roles as a husband, father, whatever it may be, starting with me and making the fundamental changes I need to make life better for myself and anybody that I interact with. I think that that's where it needs to start. You know, I think that that's, you know, the message that you got across, especially, you know, being in all the positions that you're in, you know, it starts with yourself and you've got to improve yourself to make, you know, life better for everyone.
Because I think so. The important, like for me in my life, I run grizzlybearblues.com, and that's obviously how everybody who's listening to this podcast, or most people that are listening to this podcast, know me. I'm a head football coach. I've coached hundreds at this point in my career of young Black kids, and I've had conversations with them, including the 3 years that I worked at Bolton High School right outside of Memphis, Tennessee. You know, I would watch their relationships. I would see how they interacted with people. I would learn. You know, Memphis made me a much better person. And a big chunk of that was my experience with young Black people in Memphis. I hadn't been exposed to that as much. I had, you know, some diverse situations when I was in high school and things like that. I was not removed from that way of life or from that community. But, you know, between Memphis and when I initially came back to Virginia and working at the school that I worked at there, it really has impacted me in terms of the way that I view socioeconomic status, the way that I view, like we talked about, racism. And again, as I'm a history teacher, you know, my college degree is in history and social studies. So I've studied this to an extent. And It's frustrating to hear people say that there's no systemic problem with racism in our country, because it just shows a blatant, you know, ignorance towards the history of our nation and what built it. America is a nation that was built on the backs of slave labor. And until we're able to come to greater grips with that as a society and understand what that means and how to move forward, we're going to continue to have these types of issues continue to pop up, where we're not able to have empathy and perspective when it comes to dealing with Black Americans and how they perceive the world that has been created around them.
And that's the thing that I'll say, you know, the past is prologue, as you mentioned, you know, and on along those same lines, the past is the best predictor of the future. And that's what we've got to be focused on, is the present and the future. And learning from mistakes in the past, that's fine. But changing thought processes, behaviors across all measures of society, that's the important step forward. And I'm hoping we no longer have the option of doing that. It's a must. It has to be done to end racism. And it has to end, you know, for the better, for the future generations that are in front of us. Obviously, you know, that and other things are at the forefront of everybody's mind. But we did get a little bit of a welcome back to a present that, you know, was in much happier times, I guess you could say. And that was, you know, a Woj bomb, one that a lot of people have been waiting for a long time, that the NBA is back. And Joe, Memphis has been at the forefront of being really interested in seeing what was going on, you know, what would happen when the NBA came back, the format and everything else. Well, now it's here. So we now know what the outline of how we're going to return to play and all the different aspects that's going to go into it, whether it's from a Grizzlies perspective or just in general. Your thoughts when you finally got the details and, you know, just a few initial, you know, ideas that came to mind when it came to the news that was released today?
Well, first off, I was pleasantly surprised, to be honest with you, Sean, because I thought that the Grizzlies would get the shaft a little bit more than they did. I actually thought it was kind of fair. It's still taking into account the advantage that the Grizzlies have. There's still questions about how the schedule is going to work out, so I'll reserve full judgment until we have the entire plan as we record this on Wednesday night. There's rumors about this, the next 8 games they're going to play and the 8 teams that aren't in Orlando, you know, that have skipped those games, but it doesn't fully line up with their schedules. How's that going to work out? So I'll wait for the full details to give a full final say. And I know Nate Chester, who you know over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com, a senior writer for us, he's going to take a deeper dive into it for us probably Friday or Monday. But in my initial reaction, which I wrote up over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com, and your listeners can check it out, I was pleasantly surprised. I think that Memphis is it's a common ground in that Memphis has an advantage. They're 3.5 games up. If they are able to gain a 4 or more game advantage in the last 8 regular season games that they're going to play, they get the 8 seed, and that's the way it should be. If it's less than that, they have to have a play-in tournament. And if Memphis is able to hold on to that 8 seed positioning, they have to lose twice to get knocked out of the playoffs. The 9 seed, whoever gets up to that point to take on Memphis, New Orleans, Sacramento, San Antonio, Portland, Phoenix, whatever, that team has to, if they lose once, they're eliminated. So it's a double elimination tournament for the 8 seed. So if the Grizzlies don't melt down, they will be in that play-in. It's very likely that they'll be in the play-in. And if they do melt down, then they don't deserve to be in the conversation in the first place, because that means they will have gone, 2-6, 1-7, even 0-8. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I don't think it will. But my point is, if Memphis doesn't get to that play-in situation, that means they failed. They have no one to blame but themselves. If they're the 8 or 9 seed and they're, you know, they go 4-4, 3-5, 5-3, whatever, then they have a chance to at least get into that postseason situation. So I was pleasantly surprised. I was glad to see that they honored what was done up to that point while still allowing teams like New Orleans, like San Antonio, Phoenix, all those squads to have a chance. And you can also look at it from the Pelican perspective, or especially the Pelican perspective in theory, because one of the strengths of them, one of the reasons that, you know, 538 and all those prognosticating blog type statistical groups liked them so much to make the playoffs in front of the Grizzlies, was their schedule was so easy. You know, they had home games, they had games against lighter competition. And that was one of the reasons. the 22 teams that are going to Orlando, you can make jokes about the Wizards and, you know, obviously the five teams in the West that are competing with the Grizzlies. It's not like they're trash teams, and nobody is going to be tanking except for maybe like the Bucks and the Lakers, who are trying to give LeBron or Giannis a night off, building up to the playoffs potentially. So it's not like there's going to be anybody who mass sits out folks. You're going to be playing decent competition, or at the worst, below average competition, which is still better than Detroit or, you know, what the Warriors were with all their injuries. The Pelicans' schedule just got tougher. Memphis' schedule was always going to be hard if this is the model they were going to go with, but there's no home court advantage anymore. The Pelicans now, any easy game that they did have, those teams that bottom eight squad or those bottom eight squads are no longer on that schedule. So it's going to make things harder if that is how it works out. So I am optimistic that the Grizzlies will be in that play-in mix. I don't see them going worse than 3-5, to be honest with you. And if they go 3-5, that'll probably place them at the 9 seed because they have that 3.5 game advantage already that's been put in place.
And I agree completely. I think that Memphis, basically, you are exactly correct. I think that the NBA, in an effort to make this as realistic and as close to what the original schedule was going to be like, you know, it's not perfect, but they did a good enough job to where you can't sit here and tell me that any one team is emphasized over the other or anything like that, like a lot of Memphis fans felt would be the case.
Like I felt would be the case. I thought that. I'll fully admit it. You're exactly right. So the fact that it's not that way is impressive, and kudos to the NBA.
Before we dive deeper into it, we're going to get to our first break. But before we do that, I did want to take a second to talk about one of our title sponsors, BuiltBar.com. Built Bar, obviously, is a protein bar, but it's not like most protein bars. It's got a healthy mix of good, nutritious flavor and ingredients. Plus, it tastes great. I know my favorite is the peanut butter, and there are some great options that are there. You actually can go to BuiltBar.com right now. And when you go to Built Bar, you can put in the Locked On name Locked On as far as the promo code option, and you can get $10 off your first order. The good thing about it is it's not going to be your last, because you not only do you have options for different protein bars you could choose from, you have different things that you could put into your water, things such as that. So the next time that you're enjoying a Locked On Grizzlies or Locked On episode, you can enjoy that as well with a Built Bar. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, put in promo code Locked On for $10 off your first order. We'll continue on with Joe Molnax here after this break. Welcome back to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. And again, we're here with Joe Molnax, who's been kind enough to join us actually for two episodes. This first one, we're kind of looking at the general landscape of the new format that's in place with the NBA playoffs. And in the second episode, we're going to get right into, you know, from a Grizzlies perspective, what it all means. So, Joe, looking at the format, so we talked about how, you know, the NBA, they did well. They, again, no one team was emphasized over the other. Everybody is kind of, you know, they're in the place that they should be. But the other thing that you hit on when you were talking about it, and I think that many have hit on, is that the NBA has made sure that some of its more outspoken and newer stars are going to be on the forefront. The NBA is making it clear they are making this an opportunity to feature, you know, some names to add to the elite names that are already out there for marketing purposes, money-making purposes, or whatever. Do you think that the NBA is doing that correctly? Like they did keep things fair, but also it definitely seems as if they're taking the opportunity to feature, you know, some notable names to finally get them on a big stage.
They are doing everything that they possibly can to maximize the amount of money that they can make out of this situation. And if they're going to risk their lives, if the player, and that is not hyperbole, and maybe it's not necessarily the lives of the players, they're fine-tuned athletes, most of them have, you know, strong immune systems, all that stuff. But if you're a 65-year-old head coach and you have a higher risk of career, because remember, there's a pandemic going on. That's the whole reason we're in the situation we're in with the NBA. So if you're one of those folks that's in a spot where you're going to be risking yourself, and in theory, all the players are, because you don't know the long-term effects, what may happen if you do contract the virus, it really is about the money. And I think that whether it's the 8 regular season games that are being played, multiple reports have said that it's believed that most of the regional contract, you know, obligations will be met by playing those 8 games for those 22 teams. Whether it's the play-in to try to get ratings, you mentioned Zion and Damian Lillard, Bradley Beal with the Wizards, you know, Devin Booker with Phoenix, all these young stars that are going to have the opportunity to make it in now that maybe they wouldn't have had if they just went with the top 16 and rolled into the playoffs. I do think that that is something that needs to be understood. If it was all in the name of safety, like if safety was truly the top priority and money was not a concern at all, we wouldn't be having this conversation, Sean. Like it wouldn't be happening because the NBA would have suspended their season, canceled it. It's over. We're going to wait till there's a vaccine and or a better treatment option. And we'll just punt and we'll wait till the fall or the winter or even later beyond that if it was truly 100% about health. But it's not about health. And I think that it's hard. It's not fully about health, I should say. And I think that it's hard for some people to rectify that because why would you choose money or the opportunity to make money or stabilize the economic system that is the NBA and put yourself at risk? Matt Hardlicka is a former Grizzly Bear Blues writer who has his own Patreon page, and he does an amazing job with the finances of the NBA. He's kind of like Memphis's Bobby Marks in that way. He and Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian are similar in their thought processes with that. And Bobby Marks is a salary cap expert. He understands the financials of the league for ESPN. Matt Hardlicka wrote a post for his Patreon page that I subscribe to, and it talked about just how much money the NBA could lose just from this one season being suspended. It's in the billions, Sean, with a B, not millions, billions. And that could result in a luxury tax increase or a salary cap decrease that is so costly that it would mean that 80 or 90% of the NBA is in the luxury tax. Now, the Memphis Grizzlies in the past have done their very best to stay out of the luxury tax because of the market that they're in. And owners can say and swear up and down that they'll go into the tax if they need to. If you look at the financials of the Memphis Grizzlies, it makes all the sense in the world to stay the hell out of the luxury tax, unless they are a championship contender, the Warriors of a few years ago. Okay, maybe then they're paying the tax. But beyond that, it doesn't make sense for a Memphis basketball team to be in the luxury tax. It just doesn't. Same thing can be said for Oklahoma City. Same thing can be said for other teams that are small markets. All this money being lost would ultimately hurt those small markets, and it would ultimately hurt the viability of the NBA in the long run. That's hard to understand sometimes because you see this multi-billion dollar conglomerate or corporation, and you think, how in the world can they be in that situation? It just works out that way because of how much they fund, how much they feed into. There's all sorts of extenuating circumstances that make it that they need to make as much money as possible back during this system. So they're going to do the very best they can. They're going to build this bubble, essentially, in Orlando. They're going to set up the situation to the best of their ability to be as safe for everybody involved as they can. But they were always going to do what was best, maybe not what was best for their money, but in previous podcasts on GBB Live, and maybe even an article I write so much I don't really remember. But I compare it to the supply and demand curve, Sean. The idea of if money is one axis and if risk is the other, the goal is to find the intersection point of those two lines and see where is the risk worth the money. And this plan to me is Adam Silver and the NBA saying this is the intersection point. We're risking a decent amount, but this is our best chance to make as much money as we can for the risk that we're going to be committing to. And I can't fault them for that. They're making that choice legally. It's not against the law. The state of Florida might be hosting every professional sports league if it has its way as things continue on. If they're not breaking the law and they're doing the very best that they can and they're keeping to themselves in this bubble situation, I don't see why people would really have a big issue with it. And they know the risks. They understand what's going on. And they're just willing to do that to try to save the economic systems of the NBA as much as they can.
And speaking of that, you know, obviously the NBA benefits from this, you know, monetarily, as well as, you know, the fact is that, you know, the product itself is back. And so that's certainly important in a time, you know, where, you know, everyone is wanting as much positivity as they possibly can. But focusing on the players themselves, Joe, you know, especially the Grizzlies, there are a lot of these teams, especially the teams that are now going to be fighting for playoff spots, that their cores are very young. And while they're very focused on the future, the present is very important as well. Now, there was a lot of talk before the season was suspended about how beneficial a playoff push, an unexpected playoff push, would be for the Grizzlies' young core, especially if we could have gotten Winslow, Clark, and Jackson Jr. back. Well, now they're all back. My question to you is this, is that how beneficial do you think that this type of setup will be for the young Grizzlies now in terms of an experience to build off of for the future? Do you think it's going to be any more or less beneficial than how it would have been had the season not been suspended? Or do you think it's just potentially going to be an outlier that may not be that big of an impact? Do you see any long-lasting, significant impact that this experience will have on the Grizzlies and for them to build on, you know, for future years?
I think it's a massively important opportunity. I think it's a chance for them to have a second training camp and reinstall, you know, young players. It sounds like the to expand rosters because of the concerns about COVID-19. If a player contracts it, they're not going to shut it down. They're just going to keep rocking and quarantine people that had direct contact with that person. So you're going to need more people at this stage. So having Yuta Watanabe and John Conchar, who lots of folks are saying might be a long-term Grizzly to begin with, moving forward, and maybe that spells doom for, you know, Marco Guterich or Grayson Allen, probably Guterich. But, you know, having those two-way contract guys with you, that you'll be able to reintegrate them. For the Grizzlies in particular, it's massive because it gives you Justice Winslow. And that's the third article I wrote for Grizzly Bear Blues today, on Wednesday, talking about the Justice Winslow effect. If I were the LA Lakers, or if I were the Toronto Raptors, if it was a 1-16 situation, which it's not going to be, but if I was the Lakers, I don't know that I'd be scared, because I still have two of the top five players in the NBA on my roster, and that's probably going to win me that first round series. The Grizzlies are not in that stage of their development yet, but it's not going to be a walk in the park. You know, this isn't going to be chalk. I hope nobody's going into these playoffs and thinking that it's going to be a bunch of, you know, ones, twos, threes, and fours moving on to the second round. I'm going to argue that you're going to see some pretty substantial upsets, and it may not be the Grizzlies over the Lakers or the Magic over the Bucks, but a 2-7 or a 3-6 or a 6 seed making a run to the NBA Finals, depending on who it is, I don't see that as far-fetched in this scenario, because home court advantage is gone. They're trying to find ways to get advantages for teams like the Lakers. I'm not going to make fun of them for that, because they've earned it. And you could argue that those teams are in a tougher spot than teams like the Grizzlies that were going to have home court anyway. Yeah, the Lakers or Bucks could have had home court throughout the entire playoffs in the NBA Finals. And now, if it is the Lakers and the Bucks playing in the NBA Finals in, you know, late September and early October, they're going to be playing in Disney World while everybody else is back home. So it's going to look vastly different, and I do think that that's going to lead to some upsets. And for Memphis, an upset over the Lakers would be taking, some people would say one game, but to me it would be taking two or pushing LA to seven. I think that's possible if they utilize Justice Winslow properly, and I talk about it in the article. The playmaking, the facilitating, his length as a defender, he's going to be healthy. You know, when Justice Winslow is healthy, he's a good basketball player, like a really good basketball player. He got the contract that he did, and some at the time said that that was a bargain for Justice Winslow. Now, because of the health issues he's had this past year or so, he looked like a detriment. The Miami Heat were willing to move him for players like Solomon Hill and Jay Crowder, you know, cap flexibility, but with expiring contracts, but also because those were guys that they knew would be on the floor. They couldn't count on Justice Winslow to be on the floor. Memphis couldn't either, but they were willing to be patient and wait until the 2020-2021 campaign to try to integrate him using that training camp. Lo and behold, another training camp has fallen into their laps, and that's going to be extremely valuable. They're going to have time together, again, entering that bubble here in the next couple of weeks. They're going to have an opportunity to really get to know each other, find each other on the floor and off the court, develop chemistry. That's going to be extremely, extremely important. It allows for players like Kyle Anderson and Josh Jackson to compete for a reserve role instead of being a starter. It's going to make the starters better. It's going to make the reserves better. The Grizzlies are going to be a better team. People talk about Portland having Nurkic back and Collins, and other teams are obviously going to be getting healthy, and that's fair. But I think they're underselling the Justice Winslow effect, because if he's healthy, he fits this Grizzlies team like a glove. We were already hoping that that would be the case, you know, 6 months from now. But we're in a position where we're going to get it this year, and that should have the Lakers a little bit more nervous than they were, you know, several weeks ago.
And I agree completely. I think that you hit the nail on the head. The ability to build that chemistry and the opportunity to really, you know, take the chance to see what you've got when everybody's healthy, being able to do that this year unexpectedly is a big step, you know, in the right direction. Before we get to the last part of this first episode with Joe Mullinax, I will let you know about another one of our sponsors, rockauto.com. Now, you know, I know Joe probably on his end, me on my end. Obviously, we are husbands, Joe in his case, a father as well. And one thing that we're automatically supposed to know about is cars. Well, I don't know. Joe, is your car knowledge that awesome?
No, it's terrible, actually. Really bad.
Mine is as well. So I don't have a life hack book to help you be able to do your auto repairs, but I do have an idea where you could go to potentially find parts, and that's rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a family-owned business that allows for its customers to go online and have an easy-to-search, easy-to-find method to get parts that you need delivered to you in order to make the repairs that you need. As we all know, one big way to save money is to be able to do your own repairs or find cheap alternatives is to be able to repair older vehicles to allow for their lives to be longer. What you can do is you can go to rockauto.com, use the search options to be able to find what you need. They've got great pointers on how to find what you need, very good prices. Go to the How Did You Find Out About Us section and make sure you put in Locked On, but we really want to encourage you to use rockauto.com for all your car repair needs. We'll be right back with you with the last segment of this Locked On Grizzlies podcast. Back with Joe Mullinax on episode 1 of 2. And Joe, just a couple of quick questions before we get into the episode focused specifically on the Grizzlies in regards to the NBA as a whole. Now, I had mentioned, you know, previously that I feel like that this is also an unexpected opportunity for the NBA as a whole. We've talked and, you know, listened for years of ideas of how the playoffs could be enhanced, made better, change. Do you feel that, maybe not necessarily in this format, but do you feel it would be intelligent of the NBA to use this as a time to finally put those changes in action, whether it be reseeding, expanding, whatever? But do you feel that this experience could be, you know, the kind of the launching pad for long-term changes to the playoff format? And should it be that?
In terms of the play-in and the way that it's kind of worked itself out here, no, I'm not so sure. I do think that it makes sense to start the season December 25th on Christmas, and that may not work out this year. I think they said it's possible that if there's a game 7 of the NBA Finals, it would be October 12th, which would be a Monday night lined up against a Monday night football game, assuming football goes off without a hitch, which probably isn't likely given the current state of things. I hope it is because I'm a football guy, but as far as the NBA goes, to me, going up against baseball makes a lot more sense than going up against football. Football, for all its flaws, and it has plenty of them, is still king in the United States of America, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. There's just far too much money involved, too much interest from all walks of life. Lots of folks are NFL fans. The NBA isn't quite like the NHL or MLB. I think the NBA is a solid number two in America now, but they're not close to the NFL, so competing with baseball and trying to get a little bit more from the summer months and taking advantage of being inside when it's hot as crap and, you know, that kind of thing, that makes a lot of sense to me. So starting December 25th, playing up until, you know, September, the beginning of football season is when basketball ends. That works, you know, August and September being the end. And it's an excuse to get to that. You know, that's probably how they're going to start this year. And maybe they just reset the calendar and keep that moving forward. So I think the ending in September-ish, obviously October this year because of the tough circumstances, but in the future, you know, ending in September and starting in December for the NBA in terms of competing and trying to maximize their funds, it makes a lot of sense. I could see that lasting long-term more so than the current playoff structure that they're going to be instituting because of the pandemic.
And Joe, the last question that I have in terms of the NBA in general is, you know, I agree with you. I think that, you know, while changes may need to occur, I will say this about the NBA that to me is refreshing and is nice to say compared to other sports. You know, this year has really shed, you know, in the past there's been negative light shed on the NFL leadership as a whole, owners, you know, commissioner, whatever it may be. Baseball obviously is going through its rough patch right now as well. But the NBA, with all that Adam Silver's had to deal with, you know, the death of his mentor, obviously the horrific, unexpected passing of Kobe Bryant, and now all of this that has come along, Adam Silver has continuously seemed to, you know, be able to make the call that was needed, make a call that makes sense, and move forward with it, you know, when it needed to happen. Do you feel stronger than you did previously in the leadership of the NBA as a whole and in Adam Silver as the commissioner, based off how he's handled, you know, this calendar year to this point?
Well, first off, it's really difficult to handle all the different things that have happened. Again, we talked about leadership earlier. He's in a tough spot because I think he understands, as most leaders do, and obviously he's in a pretty big spot, much bigger than me. You're going to piss off about half the people no matter what you do. If he had decided to side completely with safety, all the financial interests, sponsors, all sorts of different things, you know, the contract agreements with ESPN on the national level or TNT, and then regional networks, you know, Fox Sports Southeast with the Grizzlies, you know, you're going to piss off a lot of people. There's going to be a lot of money lost, and it's probably even going to make a lot of the players mad, to be honest with you. On the flip side, if they went with this system, or if they brought all 30 of the teams back, well, now you're flying in the face of CDC guidelines. You're taking up thousands upon thousands of tests, and testing isn't as big of a problem as it was a month ago. But at the same time, it's not like the pandemic is over. You know, recent events in the last week or so, understandably so, the anger, the frustration, the massive protests that we're seeing around the country, and then obviously states reopening even before the protests began. The pandemic's still going on. So it's very likely at this stage that in the next few weeks, we're going to see another pretty big spike in the coronavirus pandemic. And I think that Adam Silver deserves some credit to wait until July to bring everybody in. Maybe he foresaw this coming a little bit. He couldn't have foreseen the George Floyd murder and the tragedy, but he could have seen, you know, as states reopen, you want to wait and kind of have a vibe for what's happening in different markets before you bring people back and start that 4 to 6 week process of a training camp. I think he deserves some credit for getting this thing going again. You know, Major League Baseball is not able to get it rolling at all. I know you're a baseball fan, Sean, and it's looking more and more likely like there may not be a baseball season. But at the same time, you have to weigh the good with the bad. And I do think that this playoff option, if you're talking about safety, doesn't make the most sense. So on that graph we talked about earlier, I think they definitely sided a little bit more with the money aspect than they did the safety. And that's fine. Again, they're not doing anything illegal, but there's going to be consequences with that. I'd be stunned if there weren't positive tests, even with this bubble environment that they're trying to set up, and how you react and respond off of that, and how you provide healthcare for that player, and, you know, the long-term effects. Maybe you fund long-term research for people that contract COVID-19. There's ways in terms of PR that you can try to negate that a little bit, but there's going to be consequences to this decision. You just have to decide if it's worth it. And I think Adam Silver, to his credit, you know, when you're a leader, like I said earlier, you're going to piss off somebody regardless of what you do. And I guess he sided with the folks that are helping the NBA stay as profitable as it can be during a pandemic and all the other craziness going on. And again, like we talked about earlier, if your financial system is in question, if you don't do it, it's hard to argue against it if your money isn't on the table like it was for them.
And that's the thing about it. Now more than ever, you realize at some point that, you know, you're not going to make everybody happy, but a decision has to be made. Be thorough with it and be confident in it, and typically it'll work out. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break now. This is the end of this first episode with Joe Mullinax, in which we talked about the NBA and the new format in general. On the flip side, we'll catch you. We're going to talk all about the Grizzlies. But Joe, thanks for sticking around for one episode, and thank you also for doing the second one with us as well.
Of course, I'm happy to do it. You know that, Sean. I enjoy being on Locked On Grizzlies. I appreciate Mark King being a coward. When I come on the show, he's not on. But that's all right. I enjoy talking with you, and I'm looking forward to episode two.
Got it. We'll be right back with you, and thanks so much for listening to this edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.